and inclusion. This is a series of conversations about real-world diversity issues and challenges hosted by Diversity Trends, LLC. My name is Tracy Brown. I'm president of Diversity Trends and author of the book, Breaking the Barrier of Bias. Today's topic is gays, God, and the workplace. Don't you just love that topic? Since June is generally recognized as Gay and Lesbian Pride Month, this topic is especially timely. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Susan Gore, who I'll be talking with. Susan Gore has a PhD that she earned before the age of 30. She's taught in the United States and Europe. She is well known as a great facilitator of diversity training and a thought leader around issues related to incorporating and including programs that make your workplace inclusive for people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender. She did receive her degree from Vanderbilt University and has a past in Georgia, which may come up during this conversation today. And she's the principal of the Mentor Group based in Dallas, Texas, which is a consulting firm that focuses on leadership, diversity, and personal success. Susan, welcome this morning, and I'm just really glad that you were able to join us today.
Tracy, thanks for the invitation.
The title of the session, Gays, God, and the Workplace, is also the title of a book you're writing. Why that title?
Well, for over 10 years, I've been doing workshops for corporate and nonprofit clients entitled Sexual Orientation as a Business Issue or Religious Expression in Your Organization. And so the two sort of morphed into Gays, God, and the Workplace. It isn't really intended to provoke, but to acknowledge that gay people and religious values have always been part of the workplace.
Yeah, it's not entitled to provoke, but it does. So give me the synopsis of the book, which actually will become the synopsis for this conversation, kind of the framework that the book is based on.
Sure. Well, my background is in social psychology, and I'm an organization junkie, frankly. I love to figure out how people work effectively together. What I've experienced over the past 20-some years is that communication is really the basis. Dialogue, not just talking at somebody, but talking with someone. So the premise of the book is that people who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or allies, and people who identify with traditional, what I'll call strong traditional religious values, really need to talk with each other so that they can better understand where they're coming from, rather than avoiding or making up stories or assumptions about each other.
Oh, and that's so important. I know I see that a lot in sessions that I do, that many people are so convinced that they know what the other person is thinking or what the other person believes, and it's often not the case. You added a word, allies, that I think is really important, and so I'm going to ask you, what do you mean by that, and just in case someone's listening and they're not sure.
Sure. In the same way as we talk about racism or sexism, there are people who may be part of the dominant majority who believe it's just a matter of fairness to support inclusion. So men can be allies of women. White people can be allies of people of other colors. Non-gay people can be allies of people who identify as gay. And I use gay, by the way, as a generic.
Yeah, and it takes a lot to say all of the possible identity groups, and so for the purpose of this call, let's agree to use gay as the umbrella term, and if for those of you who have dialed in today and for those of you who are listening to the recording later, if either Susan or I use gay, we will use it in the broadest sense of the term.
Absolutely. So ally to me means somebody who believes in fairness and inclusion for everyone.
When I first heard the title Gay God in the Workplace, of course I made the assumption before I talked with you about it that you might have been motivated by so much tension that's been in the U.S. and in the news in the last couple of years around sexual orientation. But after talking to you, I believe that you know, this is not a new issue, especially in the workplace.
It really isn't.
Yeah, when we talk about in the workplace folks with strong traditional religious values, are we only talking about Christian fundamentalists?
Absolutely not. I think it's unfortunate that we lump people into a category if they disagree with us, you know, at the opposite extreme. I believe most of us grew up with traditional values about sexual orientation, and that it's a conversation sort of like money or religion or any of those other taboo topics that we're just pretty much everybody's not eager to have because we've been taught not to have them.
So what would be the benefit of people having these dialogues or conversations that you said, you know, you say are so important? What would that look like, and why is it so important for, you know, folks who are gay to have these conversations with people who have strong religious values, if those two groups are mutually exclusive, and we know they're not?
Well, that's a good point, Tracy. They're not mutually exclusive. I grew up Southern Baptist in suburban Atlanta, and I'm the kid who read the Bible two chapters a night, front to back, went to church every Sunday morning, went to God Squad Thursday before high school so I could eat donuts and pray, went to Young Life Camp, went to Baptist Girls Camp. My religious life is very much still an important piece of who I am. And most people have the impression that gay and spiritual or religious is mutually exclusive. So one of the first things that people might want to discover is whether that's true or not. There is more overlap in terms of values than there is difference. Although we have cast each other as enemies. In fact, there's a wonderful book by Chris Bull entitled Perfect Enemies. And it's how gay activists and religious, I want to say right, the religious right have really used each other to raise money, to create visibility, to promote people getting out in the street by casting each other as enemies, when my personal strong belief is that that's not productive, and particularly in the workplace. The goal in the workplace is to work effectively together.
And who the book was Perfect Enemies, and the
yes.
author was?
Chris Bull.
Yeah, this whole idea of making enemies, I think we tend to do that. It's that either-or thinking. It's the, you know, it's got to be black or white, right or wrong, good or bad. So we forget all the nuances of gray, and it makes it hard to do the both-and approach of saying, you know, you can have lots of different views and still be in a particular identity group. So let me give a couple of real examples that I'm betting people who are listening have heard these as well and are wondering how you would respond or what you could say if this came up. So often people in my seminars ask, you know, well, why do gay people have to flaunt what they do in the bedroom? I don't care and I don't want to know. Or, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with work.
Right.
So when you then look at your book title, Gay God in the Workplace, you know, like how would someone respond to that if they were a member of a diversity council and they were leading a discussion and that came up?
Well, no offense, but I don't want to know what other people are doing in their bedrooms either.
I am with you on that.
La, 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 you know, too much information. It is not about what people are doing in their private, intimate lives. This is about stories we have learned and stories we make up about people who have a different sexual orientation. People who aren't gay often sort of forget, I guess, or overlook the fact that they broadcast their sexual orientation pretty much all the time. Things like wearing a wedding ring, putting pictures of your family or your spouse on your desk, talking about your family activities over the weekend, talking about relatives, how you spent your Christmas. Those all are fundamentally bound up with one's sexual orientation. And just because it's what we're used to hearing, we don't make that connection. And, of course, don't make the connection to the bedroom. Even when somebody comes in, I've seen people in the workplace with T-shirts that say, baby, on a very large pregnant belly. Now, if you want to think sexually, you know how that baby got there. But that's not what we think about. We think, oh, isn't that nice? There's going to be a baby. With people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, we forget that our lives are only a small part reflected in our sexual orientation, and the rest of it has the same dimensions as anyone else.
And if you're like me, you sometimes are amazed that that question ever even comes up, you know, in this day and age that we've been dealing with sexual orientation as a workplace issue for a long time, and you would think that people could make the separation between sexual activity, sexual behavior, and then is everyone being treated with respect and fairly with equity in the workplace? So I think we do still have to address that and at least kind of understand what they can say when that comes up.
Well, and the other thing I'd throw in, Tracy, is that somehow sexual orientation has become code for gay.
Yes.
When in fact, as I was saying just a moment ago, everyone has a sexual orientation. Because the dominant orientation is heterosexual, we forget.
So with that foundation, and I agree with you 100%, with that foundation, then let's go a notch in another direction, and that is, you know, the concept or the context of, in this day and age, when people say, I don't want to work with that person, or I don't want to be around someone who is not heterosexual because my religion says it's wrong. And it gets to be a really tough challenge to have the conversation in the workplace, you know, other than just saying our policy is that we will treat everyone fairly. What might someone do? How do you reconcile, help someone reconcile their moral or religious belief with, you know, a policy that's focused on inclusion?
Well, I think it's most important for people to really know their beliefs are respected. Again, coming out of my Southern Baptist background, I know a lot of people who share the belief, it's against my religious values, I am supposed to be telling people what's important and it's immoral to be gay. If someone believes that, I don't have any interest in telling them they're wrong. My concern is, how does that impact your ability to work effectively with people who have different values? And the same conversation came up years ago, working with women as managers, working with people from different races. There is currently also a very serious debate about people working with others of the Islamic faith. So the values question isn't new either. That's not the issue. It's how do you behave in the workplace? Can you treat each other fairly, respectfully, and work together effectively? Because I'm not there to change your values. I'm there to do a good job.
In the book, as you've been writing it, have you thought of specific examples that, you know, have come to mind that you can help sort this out for people, or specific tips that you find yourself sharing that help people even open the door to this conversation and to get it on track?
Sure. I'll tell you my favorite story. and that's about Frank. And Frank knows I use his name because he's given me permission to use this story. In 1992, so you can tell it's been a while, I created and facilitated a three-day train-the-trainer for a large international corporation on sexual orientation as a business issue. And at the end of the first day, this guy comes up to me and he says, you know, Susan, you're really very good at what you do. Now, this was for 33 human resource professionals. So you can imagine, I felt very honored. This was high praise coming from someone who was a professional in that area. And I told him so. I said, Frank, that's great to hear. Thanks. He says, and you also need to know I'm a born-again Christian, and I believe you're going to burn in hell.
Okay.
Well, how does one respond to that statement? Usually when I'm doing my work, that's the question I ask. Rather than ask for 18 opinions right here, I will tell you what I said was, thank you for sharing your honest opinion. Having been born and raised Southern Baptist, I know a great deal about burning in hell, and I understand that frame of reference. Frank was simply doing what he conceived of his job to be as a fundamentalist Christian. And so that was that. And then he says, oh, and there's one other thing I need for you to know. And I'm thinking, oh, dear. So far, so good, but what's happening now? And his response was, and I will go to the mat for you to ensure that you are treated fairly in the workplace. And these are his words, because you are a child of God, and my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, calls me to do that.
That's a great story, and I understand why it's one of your favorites. Because I think, as I listen to you tell it, you know, there are several things that pop out for me. And one is, when we make it okay for people to be who they are, you know, at least you know what you're dealing with, and there's enough space. There's enough space for us to have conversations with one another and to still treat each other respectfully.
Frank took a big risk, in my opinion.
Yes.
At the end of the first day of a three-day session with his superiors and cohorts in the room, I could have gone nuts on him. Who knows? And yet, we found out we didn't have an issue. And this is the key. If I, in the book, am able to explain to people that it's not about having or not having religious values, but which values you focus on. Every religion in the world has a version of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you look at that as your foundational value, we should not have a problem in the workplace, not only around sexual orientation, but around any issue. Now, some of us are just too human to hold that up all the time, but that's the goal.
And that works if you're talking about the broad values, and where it starts to break down is when you get into the specific behaviors of what I would want done or what I would do for myself or my family. So let's look at that, because if you take the golden rule and say, you know, treat everyone with respect or let everyone, you know, kind of have their own space, that's a great, you know, value that represents, you know, the golden rule. You can do what you want to do. But let's look specifically at the difference between freedom of expression and evangelism.
Yes.
As relates especially to, you know, when companies try to institute or get ready to institute same-sex benefits, and they get a lot of pushback, not just from Christian fundamentalists, but people of many faith practices.
Yes.
And then you have people in the workplace evangelizing, saying you need to, like Frank would have said, I believe you're going to burn in hell. That worked in the conversation in the context that you shared it. But what happens when, you know, someone comes up to you and they say, the person in the cube next door to me says, you know, they believe I'm going to burn in hell and they never want to be in the same room with me. And they want me to come to church with them next Sunday and be saved. I mean, freedom of expression or evangelism? Where's the line, and how do you deal with it when people cross the line?
Well, Tracy, let me give you a counterexample, because I think a lot of the pushback coming from people with what I'll call traditional religious values is coming exactly out of the framework you described, but from the other side. If we extend domestic partner benefits, aren't we approving the gay lifestyle? If we have a group of employees who identify as gay or pro-gay, aren't we saying it's okay? And my values say it's not. So the evangelizing word or context, I think, gets put on anything that's opposite to what we believe to be true. And I think the question you ask is the right question. Where's the line? In the workplace, corporations have standards of behavior that all employees are expected to maintain. And when a corporate policy contrasts or conflicts with someone's personal values, there's a very serious discussion to have there. I may think it's okay to tell racist jokes. If my corporation has a policy that it's not okay to, then my freedom of expression ends when I walk in the door to my office or to my business, because I am, by my willingness to be employed, saying I'm willing to accept that employment contract. And it's an explicit contract. It's not like, oh, yeah, we're going to be good people. Corporations have huge exposure and liability on any number of fronts. That's why human resource policies are so clear and specific.
And it's not just the policy around how employees who are gay or lesbian will be treated. There are policies about all kinds of situations and interactions between people.
Precisely.
Well, what I'm thinking is that it would be so easy to just, like, sit and chat with you for, you know, another
it is
minutes.
Easy.
And I have 5 or 6 questions, like, in the top of my mind. But my guess is there are other people who also have questions. So in just a minute, I'm going to open the line to everyone else who's on the call. Before I do that, I want to remind everyone that this is part of a series called Conversations About Diversity and Inclusion. So our goal really is to make it a conversation and try to explore a variety of points of view. If you do have a question, please go directly to the question, and if Susan or others on the call need more context, they'll ask for that. And if you have a comment, please try to make your point in 2 or 3 sentences. And this is just to allow us to include as many people as possible as we continue the conversation. So
the conference is no longer in lecture mode.
With that, let me open up the lines. Is there anyone who has a question they'd like Susan to respond to?
The first one's always the most challenging.
Susan, I have a question.
Sure.
I had an experience visiting a large corporation where there was a man who was a very dedicated family man, had a number of children, one of whom was suffering from a congenital disease, who had, because of his family's situation and his experience with it, taken a very strong stance against abortion. And he wanted to be allowed to lobby his company at their annual meeting to ask them to take a business stance against stem cell research out of his conviction. And he was told that he would not be allowed to bring that issue to an annual company meeting. And I wonder how you feel about that in terms of disallowing religious expression.
Well, I'm curious about the question, because my understanding is if you hold stock, you have the right as a shareholder to place shareholder resolutions before the company. Now, there may be other pieces of information or background here I don't understand. And I know, of course, that boards of directors limit the number of shareholder resolutions brought forward.
Right,
but
exactly. They do control that.
Yes. But if this individual has a strong issue, like any other, my expectation is that in addition to going directly to the board, that individual would want to find others who share his perspective.
Oh, he did. There was a group that wanted to do it.
Well, I find it just curious. As a freedom of expression issue, boards do have the right to limit shareholder resolutions, so perhaps more more support would be better. I know, for example, at the Exxon annual meeting this past year, I presented a resolution on behalf of the New York State Pension Fund asking Exxon to include sexual orientation in their EEO policy. And it's been presented every year for the past 7 years, and every year a little bigger percentage of the voting shareholders support the resolution. And that's the process as I understand it. So first things first, this individual...
I congratulate you for that effort.
Well, thank you. And actually, Exxon is moving tiny baby steps forward. But my suggestion for that individual would be to get broader-based support, and then the expression is more likely to be heard.
I have heard of a couple of situations where, and I agree with everything you said, Susan, because the process is sometimes very complex, but I've heard of a couple of situations where employees of a company, you know, I think the mistake was made of asking advice from the employee perspective versus going at it from a stockholder perspective, and it is a real challenge if you go as a stockholder and feel that you have been treated unfairly. You know, there's been some retaliation because of what you put forth as a stockholder. So one of the pieces of advice I would give to any employee of an organization in that situation is be very clear when you're speaking or stepping forward as a stockholder, and be absolutely sure that when you are in the workplace on a day-to-day basis as an employee, you know, that's not the time to also keep pushing that agenda in an inappropriate way.
Yeah. Thanks for the question.
You're welcome. I'll let go.
That's a great question. A really tough situation.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm hearing you say, and I think it's important, and I've tried to make the distinction between sexual behavior and sexual orientation, and
yes,
the policies and really everything in the workplace is directed towards, it seems to me, protecting the sexual orientation of someone who is there to work, not to perform sexually. And I think so it's protecting the worker, or it's giving the person an opportunity to do their work, not to perform sexually. I mean, there may be some
Absolutely.
Jobs and some organizations that are asking people to perform in that way, but not in mine and probably not in yours. And I think too often that becomes an issue, because we have sexual harassment policies that certainly would say that sexual behavior in the workplace is inappropriate, regardless of your sexual orientation.
Exactly. And you've made a great point. One of the tips I would offer people is, as I've tried to do, when you're asked a question about sexual orientation, to try to relate it to other contexts that people are more familiar with. Part of the thing that I think happens in conversations about religious values and about sexual orientation is that they have a lot of emotional baggage attached to those two topics. So if we can talk about sexual harassment, or we can talk about racism, or talk about some other area where we have a history of experience, we've gotten a little more comfortable, not necessarily really good at avoiding the issues or avoiding the problems, but more comfortable at talking about them without the emotional charge, to bump things up to a broader context is one way I certainly advise folks to try to have the conversation, so it's not quite so scary.
But I think what happens is that some people don't want the wind taken out of their sails. I think that emotion is a driver, and sometimes we almost enjoy not having to really think about it, but just to ride that emotional wave and charge on through. And you know, in the workplace, we're supposed to think, and it seems to me, for business reasons, strategically. And you know, as a person of color in the workplace, I know that, you know, one of the things that I can remember mentors years ago saying, you know, was that, well, you know, you really got to control that emotion, because the workplace isn't a place for that. And I think that certainly it, there is a lot of emotion in the workplace. But I think that here again, you know, there is value in thinking strategically and at least limiting the emotion to the extent that it does not prevent you from really thinking and hearing what the other party is saying.
Yeah. I think it's a myth that we leave our personal lives at home, our personal values, our emotions, what we care about. And we don't get to choose many times who we are teamed up with when we're working. So finding ways to let those boundaries move together rather than become rigid barriers is really the goal I'm after. Helping people have conversations that are as least threatening as possible by acknowledging that each individual brings value to the conversation, even if I don't agree with you. I mean, for example, with Frank, I didn't have to agree with him on burning in hell. And most people really have a very strong reaction. You've told me I'm going to go to hell and this is an awful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Frank believes that, but that doesn't mean I have to.
Right.
Okay?
That's
right.
A very powerful place to when people can agree to disagree. And it's okay for me to know. I want to know where you stand. I want to know that. But that doesn't mean I have to stand in the same place. Other comments or questions? Things you'd like to hear Susan respond to, or things you'd just like to bring up as your experience and share?
I think one of the things this month, certainly, that may be experienced in many workplaces, especially as you know, the workplace begins to you know, embrace all workers regardless of sexual orientation, and many workplaces stand up and say that, is that they do generate controversy, but that controversy certainly is, as you said, an opportunity to have dialogue. And I think in many instances, sometimes corporations are adverse to controversy and sort of go back into hiding or say, well, this is too hot, let's drop it. But, you know, not so very long ago, certainly issues around race and gender also provoked controversy, and we didn't run scared. We didn't backtrack, or for the most part, I would say. And I think, however, that this particular issue sometimes, I think, has been more difficult to move along because people felt as though, well, you know, who's it going to hurt, or maybe this isn't the same type of issue, and so therefore maybe we need to go slower, or perhaps we need to try to do this more subtly. And yet I think that, as you mentioned about, you know, conversations in the workplace about heterosexual relationships, we're really talking about a workplace that is already charged with, it seems to me, a lot of conversation about people's sexual orientation as heterosexual in a positive and a supportive way. And so therefore, we've already established, it seems to me, some criteria for discussion of sexual orientation in the workplace. And I'm not sure that heterosexuals would want to cut back on that conversation or those types of interactions. But I would say that if homosexuals can't enjoy the same freedom, then perhaps, as some workplaces have done, there are no pictures, there are no allusions to any kind of relationships that have to do with sexual orientation. That would be a terribly sterile environment to exist in, but it seems to me that, you know, out of fairness, if people can't communicate and share certain aspects of their lives and their relationships in the workplace because of one sexual orientation, why should they be able to do that because of any other sexual orientation?
No, I agree, and I think my definition of privilege is this. Privilege is not having to think about things. And if you look at the workplace and how it's changing in so many different dimensions, part of the discomfort, in my opinion, about sexual orientation as it relates to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people is that we haven't had to think about it. With few exceptions, someone like me, I'm a bisexual woman in a 14-year relationship with a woman. You wouldn't know that if I didn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the pushback, I believe, comes from not wanting to know. Mm-hmm. I don't have to think about it when I look at you. Unlike someone who's a person of color or a person who's of a certain age or any number of other visible attributes. But I also don't want to ignore the business case in favor of thinking about these things. And I'm sure most of you hear this over and over, but I don't want to miss it, because a business succeeds to the ability it has to attract and retain the best and brightest people. That pool includes people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, and also people who have strong traditional religious values. Productivity and teamwork determines how well a business does. We come back to the topic, how do we get people who have these different perspectives working together effectively? You've got target markets and vendors. In the gay community, it's estimated to be a $40 billion market. There are vendors like myself who come and provide workshops or consultation. There are people who do workshops across the board topically. So expanding that range of options. You have legal obligations, both federal, state, local, and finally you have corporate values. And the thing that I really try to impress on people when I talk about sexual orientation and religious expression is that corporate values state the ethics of a company, and it's not mutually exclusive to do something ethical and to do something smart or business-like. So I think tying it all together is having the corporate values really set the tone and the behavior for the people within an organization. It's a new level of expanding the definition, but it's not the last level by any means.
Susan, I've got a question.
Yeah.
What advice or perspective would you offer to large companies, companies that are nationally known, who might have brands that are household names, when they're challenged by either side, that being faith-based organizations or the gay and lesbian community? These are companies that are doing good things in the workplace in terms of building an inclusive environment, also doing good things in the marketplace to reach out to gay and lesbian consumers,
mm-hmm.
but then are attacked by one side or the other because of its practices. So, for example, advertising on Will and Grace or Queer Eye for the Straight Guy elicits a response from the American Family Association or Focus on the Family, and suddenly you're part of a campaign to prevent you from doing that. And then if you stop doing it, you get attacked from the other side, who says, why did you do that? So
I'm sorry. Yes. You know, win situation.
Right.
It really is unfortunate, and it is common. Years ago, American Airlines was faced with just that dilemma, and I'll use that as an example. American created a marketing team of five individuals who targeted the gay community. Started with one individual, and in 1 year, that one individual brought in a recognizable, identifiable $20 million in additional revenue by targeting the gay market. Well, you can imagine, and I want to say the religious right, because not all faith traditions are opposed to equity for gay people.
Right.
My own religious tradition is Unitarian Universalist, and they are at the forefront of civil rights for gay people. So if I may use traditional religious values or Christian right or whatever more specifically.
Sure.
What American did was bring people together. And I think today that's the same approach that needs to be taken. You identify where the concern, the pushback is coming from. And internally, I think a corporation has a high responsibility to continuing to function well internally. So you bring representatives together inside the organization. You know, Focus on the Family has all the right in the world to protest. And it would matter more to me as a corporate CEO to know what my own employees were thinking and feeling. So bringing people together who represent different points of view and becoming clear on what the issues are first, and then having a thoughtful conversation or a dialogue about how we address this issue proactively. I'll give you another example that's a little more recent, and that's Microsoft.
Right.
Microsoft found itself in a world of hurt because they instructed their lobbyists on the day of a state vote that they had shifted their corporate position from favoring gay equity to neutral.
Right.
It created a huge turmoil within the company and outside the company. There was a faith-based group in Seattle that claimed credit for the move because they had contacted Microsoft and said, you can't do this, it's against God's will. Microsoft got itself caught between a rock and a very hard place. Once they had made the change without communicating it internally, and that to me was the biggest failure. Microsoft has a right to take a position on legislation as they see fit within their corporate values. What they failed to do was to communicate internally the dialogue behind their reasoning and the outcome of their reasoning before it hit the papers. And as you may know, Microsoft has now changed its position, in fact, to support equity, and the next time a legislative action in Washington comes up, they will be on the in favor of column. So in both of those examples, what I think is the most important is having a clear understanding of why you're taking a certain position and communicating it very effectively internally. And externally, people will make noise for their own benefit. It probably won't have much impact on your business. And that was, again, what American Airlines discovered. There was no impact on their travel business, although later they did create a position for someone to target the Christian market.
Susan, I want to add to that, because I think one of the keys is, just like with any other business issue, when you are making the decision to do choice A or choice B, whatever that is, it's part of the strategic planning to say, what is the possible backlash? Who's not going to be happy with this decision? How are we going to be prepared to respond? You know, and when we make the decision, we know up front that we're going to get some pushback, or we can expect some. And here's why we're making this decision, and here's what we will say. So when you have that up front, then instead of controversy shifting you into chaos, which is what really makes most organizations conflict-averse, they're afraid the controversy will come and then, you know, everything will be out of control and it'll be chaotic. When you've done the work up front, whenever possible, you're more likely to go from controversy to collaboration. So I love, Susan, what you said about, you know, the example of bringing people together who have diverse or differing views to have the conversation. And I think that's also what I like so much about the approach you're taking with God, Gave, and the Workplace, that basic premise is that we need to talk to each other, we need to share information so that we're not just you know, in conflict without even understanding what's beneath that, what's beneath the surface.
And I think what that dialogue does also is it stops those sides or the battle line from being drawn so clearly between two monolithic groups, and rather it creates, it seems to me, other groups that can't be defined strictly by sexual orientation or by religious beliefs. People begin to choose individually. And so therefore, we never have perhaps an absolute 100% win situation. We always have, it seems to me, people choosing individually to vote with or outside of those groups that we might want to categorize them in. But we at least give those individuals an opportunity to think about it and to make that individual decision. And I really think that has value if you're looking at the client or the customer, that they somehow have been given enough information to make that decision independently based upon what they believe as an individual, as opposed to marching lockstep and just not thinking. I'm just voting with my party or what have you. So I think that's certainly more democratic and I think ultimately more useful than trying to create these absolute win-win situations that are probably a myth anyway.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And let me say, I imagine your experience is similar. A lot of people feel pretty unhappy that in feeling that the word Christian has been hijacked with the phrase Christian right, as if everybody who opposes what a group like Focus on the Family says is somehow not Christian. It gets back to that either-or, yes-no thinking, rather than recognizing people sit at a variety of places in the constellation of their values. The other thing I'd want to mention, because I don't want it to get lost, is that it would be foolish to assume that gay issues only impact people who are, in fact, GLBT, or gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. People have gay kids. People have gay siblings. People have friends, loved ones. And anybody who thinks about fairness that includes sexual orientation around GLBT issues is impacted, not just, oh, well, we've got 5 gay employees. Why do we need to worry about them?
I'm really glad you added that. I was going to try to get that in before we ended the call. And so that is so important that while sexual orientation is one of those invisible dimensions of diversity, it's not only the folks who fit in that category by their self-definition, but all the folks who are around them and who care about them, and all of us who believe in fair treatment. So I want to reinforce that. I think you said that in a timely way, and it's so important. One of the things that's coming up for me is that reminder that, you know, we don't work with groups of people, and we don't work with the identity group. We work with individuals. And if we're diversity champions in the workplace, we are trying to make sure that individuals who work in the company have access to career mobility and to, you know, bring all of themselves to work, and that our companies treat our customers and the people in the community fairly and with respect. So it can be a really big issue, but we have to do it one person at a time versus one identity group at a time. Susan, I want to do 2 things. We've got about 5 minutes before we end the call. One is I do want you to give your website or your email address. How can people, if they have additional questions or if they want to continue the conversation with you or use you as a resource, how could they be in touch with you?
Well, my website is www.mentor-group.com. And my email is sgore@mentor-group.com. My website gives some basics about things I do, clients I've worked with, and you can email me through that or you can email me directly.
So that's the website is mentor-group.com, and the email address is sgore@mentor-group.com. Just repeating that. Is there anyone on the call who has a final question or comment before we go to our close? Opportunity for question or comment going once. Twice. Great. Well, Susan, let me ask you one final question before we close. You've shared some good ideas and some suggestions for us, and I have heard that as education for us and affirmation. But you've also, at one point in your life or throughout your life, been an activist. For you, what's the difference for those of us who are diversity champions between being an activist and being an educator? How do you
Interesting.
Kind of balance those two?
Interesting question, Tracy. I think sometimes activist comes across as a dirty word or a firebrand word. I don't carry that connotation, but let's imagine as an employee, I want to be both. I want to offer people the opportunity to know who I am, to educate them about things they may not feel comfortable talking with someone else about. As an activist, my goal is to move a larger organization or group of people, I suppose, to be part of moving forward with others. But the firebrand piece of activist is really off-putting to most folks.
And I love that we if we're diversity champions, we probably find ourselves doing both. But being very much aware of when to, you know, push certain buttons. So great, thanks. I'm really looking forward to reading Gaze, God, and the Workplace and sharing it with others. So I really appreciate you being with us today.
My pleasure, Tracy. Thank you. And thank everyone on the call for the questions.
The conference is in lecture mode. The conference is no longer in lecture mode.